Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge, with Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Bula, hola, and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the rugby podcast that is entirely in Spanish and Fijian. Today, joining me is Mr. Will Owen. How are you doing?
Yeah, all right. I can't really think of a funny, like, Spanish way of saying my name, or your name, indeed, without sounding racist. Who are you? What's your name? How would you pronounce your name?
I'm Robbie, or Squidge, or whatever you want to call
me. Okay, how do you say that in Spanish?
I go by literally anything.
Okay.
Les Squidge. That's how you say it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've mentioned my thing about not being able to speak to Juan Imhoff. You were there, of course.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it was after a game between Racing and Leicester Tigers.
Yes.
Played in Nottingham, so we went along.
The City Ground, yeah.
Yeah. We went on, there was a pitch invasion by Racing fans afterwards, after they won.
Yeah.
And we joined in, we went on the pitch. Yeah. You hug Luke Charteris.
Yeah. I kind of went for a high five with him, and he got really carried away with it, and like did the like that kind of high five where you slap the guy on the back.
Yeah.
Luke Charteris was buzzing because I was wearing a Wales shirt, so he was buzzing like, oh yeah, there's somebody who's a fan of me here. Like, it's not just my teammates that I can celebrate this with. That was great. I also shook Mike Phillips' hand, and he did not give a shit.
Mike Phillips did not care.
He did
but
not
Luke
care.
Luke Charteris was absolutely delighted to see.
Yeah, he was
Luke
buzzing
Charteris
to see.
Has never
him.
Been happier, man. Like, Luke Charteris' job now is entirely line-outs.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that is a man who loves line-outs. But he's never been happier than you were shaking your hand.
But it is at Bath, so...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but it's interesting, actually, because before... I know you've got a story you want to tell here, but there is a sub-story of this. And this is long before you were even Squidge or anything like that.
Sure.
But we went to this game specifically because Dan Carter was in Nottingham, where we live.
Yeah.
And just for Dan Carter, we went there because he was playing for Racing at this point. Mm. And it was monumental seeing Dan Carter that close up in the flesh. Sadly, by the time we got onto the pitch for the invasion, we obviously just bolted it straight
Dan
to look
Carter
for Carter.
Straight down.
He was straight in the change room. Like, he knew that he couldn't hang about. Instead, we met Brian O'Driscoll very briefly. Well, same
he
met.
Did.
He didn't speak to us. But I did get a picture with him. You're in the background of said picture. And he didn't say a word, but he kind of said, yes, that's okay, you can have pictures. Anyway, you wore a t-shirt. You know what, you described the t-shirt. It was your idea.
I just got a plain white t-shirt. And I'd written on it, I love you, Dan Carter, but I can't afford an all-black shirt. Because I wanted to show that I was supporting Dan Carter, so I wrote that on in marker pen on that t-shirt.
Yeah. And sadly, it never got used again. You've still got it, though, haven't you? It's still in your room somewhere.
I believe so. I believe it's still hanging up in a cupboard somewhere.
Yeah.
I've mentioned this
one
before.
One day that will go for millions.
That was the day that I touched Maxime Machinot's bum.
Oh, yes, of course.
I believe
your fingers, like, brushed
Machinot's
bum,
I full-on, like, touched his... Because they did, like, a tunnel with walking through all of the supporters and, like, people patting them on the back and so on.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, Machinot, I guess it was lower down than I was expecting because he's... Or that, I don't know.
Yeah,
whatever
yeah.
it was. And
but you felt his bare ass and his asshole specifically. Yeah.
I put fingers into my... I did not do that. I want to make that very, very clear.
What was it like? What was ass like?
I believe I've talked about this before. I believe I'm on the record talking about this before.
Yeah,
Maxi Machinot had the firmest buttocks I've ever felt.
Okay, yeah.
And yeah, my hand... Well, we had a moment of looking at each other and I went to apologise, but we kind of like looked at each other, but like both realised that was awkward and it was a mistake. And then he kept walking and I kind of went about my business. But my hand like went quite firmly onto Maxine accidentally. I want to make the point, very accidentally, when they're doing a tunnel of supporters patting people through, went accidentally onto Maxine Machinot's bum.
Yeah. You gave him Le Squeege.
I did not mean to.
Were they the nicest buttocks you've touched? Were they up there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course they were.
Certainly as far as French international scrum halves go.
Sure, I mean, yeah. I mean,
whose
I've only
buttocks you've touched?
Three more, so,
yeah.
You know.
Jean-Marc Doucin didn't quite live up to it.
No, really, really not the same.
Yeah.
Morecambe Power is weirdly flabby for quite a small man. And then I was an enormous, enormous fan of how the buttocks of...
Buxies?
No, because I was going to... Right, because I was going to...
La Maison?
Go for like...
Castagnard?
Sure, let's go for Maison. Let's go for Maison. Because my first instinct was to go for someone that isn't obvious. And I thought like, oh, why don't I say like Pauline Bourdon? Then I realised that's got very different connotations.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that. I don't like this bit and I want to move on from this.
Okay. Tell us the story about Juan Imhoff.
Nah, let's not. Let's go on to Argentina v Fiji. Basically, I saw Juan Imhoff. He was standing there and he was one of my favourite players at the time. I was a really good fan of Juan Imhoff.
I can remember.
And I saw him standing there and he was kind of chatting to the people and he started to walk off and he was kind of looking around like, does no one else want to talk to me? And I went over and thought like, I could go and talk to Juan Imhoff. And then I thought...
He's unmarked.
Wait. And I started rattling through all the Spanish I knew. And the only words in Spanish I could remember off the top of my head were the words for orange juice and rapist. Zoma de Naranja and Violador.
Yeah.
Which has a far longer story associated. And I feel like I've told it on this podcast before.
I think you have, yeah.
And I thought, no, I'm not going to go up to him and say, hello, I am the orange juice rapist. That seemed like a bad idea, so I didn't do it. And I don't like this story.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously if it was Paddy Jackson I was interviewing, I may have said one of those two things to him.
Because
I know he loves orange juice.
Yeah.
However, you know, it's a very different story.
Yeah.
Why do they tell that story?
I don't know. We were talking about Spanish, the language. I once said gracias amigo to Lucas Gonzalez and Morosino.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
After it was the 2015 World Cup, Argentina versus Namibia. He just signed my ticket.
Oh.
From when we went to the 2015 World Cup together, a bunch of my tickets got signed. And I looked at them the other day and I barely remember who I got to sign most of them. I think one of them's Kieran Hearn. I think one of them's Tom Francis.
Kieran
one of them definitely...
I think chat with Kieran Hearn. Like, we talked about how good a World Cup he had. And he was not bothered.
I remember using the word outstanding to him. And he was just there like, oh, thanks. Because I think that actually did mean something to him,
somebody paid
attention.
He did appreciate it, but it was just after they lost to Romania later on.
Yeah, so
he wasn't
in a good mood.
Crestfallen. Yeah.
Nathan Hirayama said thanks for coming for us as well.
Yes, he did.
He's just a very polite Canadian man, is Nathan Hirayama. Oh, we could go on with these, but I think we need to save some of these stories back.
Yeah, I mean, we've only got a very limited number. And not especially good stories.
No, none of them are any good, but yeah.
Yep, so the game we're here to talk about is the first upset in the history of the Rugby World Cup, which was Argentina against Fiji from 1987. The very first major upset in the history of the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
Argentina, despite the time still being a Tier 2 nation, very much went in as favourites.
Yeah, commentators constantly talk about how they're favourites to get to quarterfinals, that they'll probably lose to the All Blacks, but they should breeze through this pool otherwise, with Fiji and Italy being the other teams in the pool.
Exactly, and there was a real like vibe around Argentina. Like they were one of the teams who were really talked up. They were one of the biggest advocates for there being a Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
So they had 2 years prior to this, they toured New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the moment that Argentine rugby really made its name. Hugo Porter was the captain at the time. He'd been playing for them for quite a long time. And
yeah, he's
like,
35 at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, there was an article in Rugby World about him a few years ago when they did a rundown of the greatest tens of all time, in which they argued that Porter might be the player who did most for rugby in a nation of any player in history.
Right, okay.
And I think that's fair. Like,
Hugo
Porter single-handedly raised up Argentina.
That is valid, to be fair. And like, even looking at this Argentina team now, he is very much the one who stands out on that team.
Yeah.
To be fair, I'm probably not the most qualified to talk about this because I don't really know that many of the players.
We'll get into it as we go on, I guess.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so Argentina had toured New Zealand 2 years earlier, or they'd had New Zealand tour there 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
So they played two tests against them. And in that time, right, in those games, the first test was 20-33 to New Zealand,
Blacks
winning it.
That's quite close.
Argentina put up a fight.
Yeah.
And Hugo Porter scored all 20 of Argentina's points. The second test was a 21-all draw, with once again Hugo Porter scoring all of the All Blacks points.
That's monumental.
Their best result against the All Blacks until 2 years ago now.
Until 2020,
when they finally beat them.
Yeah, that's amazing, to be fair. He really does stand out on this team sheet, doesn't he? Because, like, he's the one who you recognise as an all-time great, which really does say a lot to say this is 1987 and this is him retiring not long after this.
Mm.
That's a hell of a reputation to build when Argentina didn't really, weren't really known as having a rugby team before this point. As you say, he's sort of the guy who raised their profile because Argentina's rugby team, let's face it, weren't that good back then.
No, they were building. They'd kind of built themselves from nothing into the.
But without if Porter never happened, is my point.
If Porter never happened, because they beat Australia in the '70s, and that was kind of seen as like a huge fluke result,
right? Yeah,
and then Porter happens straight afterwards.
Yeah,
and suddenly they become like, oh, they're a consistent team who can produce these players.
Sure.
In the lead up to this World Cup, they beat France in two tests in 1985 and 1986.
And that's strong.
France were Six Nations champions heading into this World Cup.
Okay.
And I have misjudged Argentina in the 80s.
Okay.
But they were kind of coming out of nowhere. You know, coming out of nowhere in the like 5 years leading into this World Cup.
Yeah.
It's similar to sort of, you know, remember in Samoa in the 2011 when they beat Australia?
Yeah.
And that was kind of a fluke result.
Sure.
Imagine if they kicked on from there.
And yeah.
Porto was a big part of them kicking on from there.
Course.
And then building towards the point at which we have 2007. And there are links to 2007 in this team, which we'll get onto.
Yeah.
Fiji, before we move on, just for context, while I'm giving it.
Yeah.
Fiji finished third in the Pacific Nations tournament that year.
Yeah.
Western Samoa had won it, despite not being in the World Cup. They weren't invited. And Tonga had finished second.
Yeah.
So Fiji had lost to both of those. Only narrowly both games, but they still lost. But then they'd also lost 67-7 to the New Zealand Provincial Barbarians in a World Cup warm-up match.
Yeah. So the commentator says at one point that the only game they've won in the last couple of years was against Auckland, which is really quite telling. So the commentators certainly weren't expecting Fiji to pull off a win at this point.
No, did you hear they were huge underdogs.
The other thing about Fiji that they said as they were running out for the kickoff.
What?
The week before this match, Fiji overthrew their government.
Oh.
And so the interviewers and everything were asking, you know, is this going to throw you off the game at all? Mm. And the Fijian coach had to keep playing it down and say, you know, we're not affected by world news mentally or psychologically in our camp. So they were, you know, they were focused on the task at hand, which was beating Argentina. Wow. So, yeah, that's the week before this test match.
I think I mentioned in the first episode on this that the Fijian Revolution took place this year.
Yes, you did. You did.
But I didn't realise it was a week before the World Cup.
Yeah, 10 days before this particular match. Yeah.
That's enormous.
So it was the week the World Cup started. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Wow.
Should we move on and look at the teams then?
Yeah, let's look at the teams, because I think they're quite interesting teams.
They are. Do you want to start with Argentina?
Let's start with Argentina. So captain by Hugo Porter at 10, who is the real stand-up player, as you say, when you look at them, he's the real icon, the iconic player throughout.
Yeah.
My favourite point of this team is the front row.
Yes.
So Argentina's first choice hooker got injured just before this World Cup, and instead of calling up a replacement hooker for him, they just decided to play three props in the front row. So three of their front rowers are props. Diego Cash wears the hooker shirt because he was the shortest of the props they had.
Johnny Cash's son.
Right, sorry. Diego Cash, of course, goes on to be the forwards coach of Argentina in the 2007 World Cup.
Right,
those upsets. So he
Cash rules everything around me.
Absolutely. Dollar bill, you all. A few episodes ago, we had the dollar too strong for the yen. This time, Cash not strong enough at all. And we also have, on coaching terms, Fabián Tornés at 12 for Argentina.
Right.
Who you may not recognise his name.
I don't.
Because you may not remember the job he's done, despite it being very relevant to us.
Okay.
He goes on to be the attack coach for Argentina under Santiago Falan, including at the 2011 Rugby World Cup.
Right.
So all of those games when Argentina's entire attack is give it to Rodriguez on the halfway line to have a shot at goal.
It's his fault.
That was him.
Look, he's the one who didn't overcoach Felipe Contepomi and stop him from being a one-man team.
It's entirely down to him.
So he's the guy who was standing there watching Lucas Amorosino go the length and go, yeah, do that.
Yeah, that was it. He saw that in the training and went like, yeah, that'll work. You should try that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I did not know that was him. Right, okay. I wasn't actually familiar with him before watching this game. So Diego Cuesta Silva partners him in the midfield, who was quite good. I liked the look of him. And then Sebastian Salvat at fullback, who was brought through as this young outside half. Mm. And they were saying, you know, if he came through at any other time, he'd have the 10 jersey. But he's just come through towards the end of Hugo Porter's career. So they kind of tipped him as the next big thing, but they had to get him in the team. So they gave him the 15 jersey instead.
He goes on to captain Argentina at the 1995 World Cup.
Makes sense. You could tell he was talented. Yeah. Looking at this game.
He was the player I enjoyed most.
I think he's the first fullback we've seen in this tournament who's not dropped any balls, like, at all, really.
He's a proper body-on-the-line fullback. Yeah, I really enjoyed him.
He was good.
At every given opportunity, will dive on the ball.
Yes.
There's a few times where he's got no hope of getting to it, or he's under no pressure, there's no one near him, and he will still dramatically dive on the ball.
Yeah.
Because he's so desperate to put his body on the line. Yeah. I really enjoyed Sebastian Salah.
Yeah, he was good.
I was surprised to find out he was a fly half, because he felt like an out-and-out fullback.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. The one other player from the Argentine squad that I want to talk about is Jorge Ajen.
Yes.
As the commentator once referred to him as, just to point out that that's his Argentine pronunciation of his name, but he was just going to call him George Allen for the rest of the game because he is of English parentage but was born in Argentina. So that's how he was genuinely qualified for Argentina. It wasn't another bloody Ray Nelson gate.
What is it with the surname Allen and qualifying for other nations?
I thought with this.
Tommaso Allen.
Yeah.
I discovered, actually, when I was looking at something around this game, I discovered this today. I didn't know Tommaso Allen's mother. Do you know about Tommaso Allen's mother?
No.
She was the first ever captain of the Italian women's team.
Really?
Rugby, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I never knew that.
I didn't know that. But yeah, so there's a huge link there. And actually, it's relevant to Gustavo Milano, the Argentine second row.
Yeah.
Who comes off in the second half. But he not only comes off for Argentina, he left Argentina permanently to go and play in Italy. And he went on to win one cap for Italy in 1990 against the Soviet Union.
Oh, wow. This sounds like a glittering international career, Iyad.
He came off the bench again for that team, where he replaced Roberto Ferraro, the father of Simone.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow. That's a hell of a story for extreme rugby nerds.
Yep. Yeah, what a tale that is. I enjoy looking through the teams of that game as well.
Yeah.
Because some of the Soviet Union teams, they clearly don't have to have information on, but it just lists them by surname.
Oh.
So I'm looking for the team, right?
Like
their
Pele.
Their back line is David Zergagadze, Vlad Zevefora, then just Dietlov. And we all know Dietlov, you know, one of the all-time iconic rugby players.
One of the greatest Andrei players Gamaskin, in the whole of Russia.
Igor Zumazin, Yuri Nayalev, Moskakov, Barizov as well. They're just one word names.
I like these guys. Anyway, enough about the 1990 Russian team. Should we look at the Fijian team from the match we're covering today?
If we have to.
We'll start with the pack.
Mm.
Front row, no one cares. But they're captained by Rakoroy in the second row. Then they have some really athletic kind of back five players in Savai, Hale, Nkoro and Sande, who's of no relation to Emily Sande, because it's spelled differently. But they all played like backs, and I enjoyed the lot of them.
But, okay, I will mention Kerwin Sandai, who is the nephew of Sandai. You mentioned no relation.
Yeah.
I would leave this be, but he went on to win one cap for Fiji.
Oh, okay.
At Tighthead.
Nice.
Which makes him one of the very rare players who moves down the team sheet.
Yes.
We always have this theory that players, you know, whose father played rugby to a high standard, they always end up playing like a higher number in the team.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
All the same, you know.
Yeah.
Apart from some fullbacks, some backs move into 10.
Yes.
But like all
Yeah, like
forwards,
Adam Hastings.
Yeah. Or Robin Unterback.
Yeah.
All forward sons go on to play a higher number than their parents did.
Yeah. It's really weird. Like Cooley Falatau, second row, his son's a number 8. Like both Keith Wood and Mario Ledesma have kids who are 10s, and that's weird.
Yeah, it constantly happens. It happens with every example.
The one that's the other way around is that Mako and Billy Vanapola's dad was a 10.
Yes, which always surprised me.
Yeah, but clearly take after their mum.
Then you have Marnie Vanapola as well, who plays on that side.
Yeah, that's true. He's representing the backs for that family.
But speaking of John Sande, I just want to take a moment to talk about John Sande. Right?
Okay.
Because I opened his Wikipedia page, and it's very interesting.
Okay.
So, John Sande, right, do you want to hear the part of his Wikipedia page on his rugby career?
Go on.
John Sande is a former Fijian rugby union player who plays as a lock and number 8. His only international caps were in the 1987 World Cup, where he played two matches against Argentina and New Zealand. That is the extent of the information on his rugby career. However, there are another three sections.
Right.
There's a very long section on his personal life.
Okay.
Which talks in detail about his four children, two girls and two boys, what they went on to do, his wife, his nephew. All of that comes up. He's the director of the Malaysian Trustee Services LTD, where he is a merchant banker with over 40 years' experience in the industry and several venues in Papua New Guinea, Australia and Fiji, and runs a business consultancy company, providing consultancy in the resource sectors and many fisheries, mining, oil and gas fields, and landowner groups, right? But then there's another section on his Wikipedia page called Future. And now, we've been a big fan on this podcast of anyone who very clearly edits their own Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
And John Sunday very clearly edits his own Wikipedia page.
Okay, okay. Hit me.
Because he added this section.
All right.
That has never been edited by anyone.
Okay. Okay.
John has various upcoming new products as well as new companies. He's put the wrong, possibly in the wrong place on companies, but that's fine. John is soon to release his new Cavachews, brackets $10 each, product around the world in early May or late April, no idea which month, which year. Also coming to the world, his Cava drink and lollipop, which is said to relax the body and relieve stress.
Can you please check when that was edited, when that was last edited?
This is, hold on, this has already been pre-ordered, brackets sold out. John is also busy trying to grow his company, which is estimated by the end of this year will be worth around 800 million kina, which is converted to 250 million US dollars.
Oh my god. He's John a baller. Cash rules everything John... around him.
John is undergoing his Cava farm with already 134 acres planted ready for harvest.
Wow.
That's... That is the end of the future section.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, can you check when that was last edited? So what year he's referring to?
It was last edited in May 2020.
Okay.
But that was only the replacement of the dates in his rugby biography.
Okay, okay.
So it looks like 2019 there were three edits, and there were lots of edits in 2018.
Okay. So in theory, he should be like a hundreds of millionaire by now so with his Carver farm.
Last time content was added was 2018.
Okay, okay.
So, I believe that is where he's up to. His Carver farm, his Carver chews, which are $10 each.
Well, I want to pull you up on the whole Wikipedia thing here, because I've got an update that I was meaning to bring up on this podcast, and I think that's the perfect segue.
Okay.
I've gone onto Lee Mears' Wikipedia page.
Okay.
And there's a section on his personal life, which reads as following. Since retiring from rugby, Mears has been known to be a well-renowned crisp salesman. He's known to sell crisps at 11p per unit, striking a good balance between his rugby life and his business life. And it's like, sure, somebody has listened to the podcast and done that, or I've done it when I'm pissed. I don't know which one it is. They're both probably equally likely. However, there is an extension to this. Although at a recent dinner at Bahrain Rugby Club, brackets 100 Legend, Friday the 26th of November 2021, Lee Mears disputed this figure. So Lee Mears is aware of the fact that he sells crisps at 11p per unit. And has denied it outright.
There's so much to unpack here. So, one, because I panicked in the moment and said that Lee Mears sells crisps once.
Yeah.
That's now coming up on the after dinner circuit. Okay, but the best moment is... Someone there was clearly interviewing Lee Mears. They're asking them questions for a dinner.
In Bahrain.
And they pulled up his Wikipedia page and went, hold on, does he sell crisps now?
And then he probably said, okay, so talk to us about the privilege of playing for the British and Irish Lions. How was that? And it's like, so since retirement, you started selling crisps. And he goes, what?
That's 11 people.
So it's true. You sell crisps for 11 pence. It's like, no, what do you mean? I like the thought of the interviewer bring that up really smoothly and say, like, so, obviously now you sell crisps.
And he had to go, what? No, I'm currently wearing my rugby player jersey. I haven't stripped into crisp salesman Lee Mears yet.
So Lee Mears is aware of this bit.
He must have gone home to his wife and said, like, they asked me if I sell crisps. Why would I sell crisps now?
And then the interviewer went home red-faced and went, I just need to edit this Wikipedia page in case anyone makes the same mistake.
He disputed it. He disputed that he sells crisps.
It doesn't happen. Somebody's lied. Somebody has lied.
He disputed that he sells crisps. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's very, very good.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing else in his Wikipedia page.
There's nothing on futures.
Saying. It does say, however, that Lee Mears holds two world records for the fact that he's played rugby at both the North Pole and at Mount Everest.
I knew he played rugby at the North Pole.
That's pretty impressive.
That game was refereed by someone like Kieran Bracken or some random...
I thought you were going to say Keira Knightley.
It was refereed by Keira Knightley, yeah. Yeah, it was a really, really impressive feat by her. Like, one of her greatest performances to date.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You really believe that she was a rugby referee.
Yeah, yeah, and not like an expert footballer. Like,
no, exactly, like which Beckham. We know she is. Which you know
yeah,
she
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
That film is real.
It is real. I thought you said it's real, like it's set in real.
It is set in real.
I miss hearing you a lot, but I'm hearing the right things regardless. I'm hearing things that are correct that you're saying by accident.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Should we go back to the Fiji team?
We could,
because their three-quarter line is unbelievable. That they've got Tomasi Tharma Sr., which is, like, pretty unbelievable. And he doesn't really see much ball in this game, but obviously legend of both 15s and 7s and father of one of the greatest and All Black 7s players of all time.
Yeah, as I say, father of another all-time great 7s player.
Yeah, and there's another significant family connection in this team.
Mm.
As on the right wing, there is one Kavakini Nalanga, father of Napoleone. Napoleone, at this time, was 1 year old.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, and his dad was scoring in World Cups. And at fullback, they had a wonderful player called Savaro Koroduadua, who was nicknamed Super Boot, because he was the one player in Fiji who knew how to kick a ball. And boy, did he know how to kick a ball. He was an impressive human. Was Koroduadua.
Just go back to Nalanga a moment.
Yes.
Because the Nalangas became the first father and son pair to both score in a Rugby World Cup.
Oh, really?
Yep. First to ever do it.
That's
and I believe
very
they might have been
stuff.
The first pair to do it as well.
Wow.
Because there was an article by the Rugby World Cup itself that said 2015 was the first time there's been father and son. Like, sons whose fathers played in the Rugby World Cup.
Right.
But that's not true because Nalanga played in 2011. Napoleone played in 2011.
Yeah.
And his father was played in 1987.
So eat I that believe world rugby.
They're the first to ever score and probably the first to ever play in the rugby.
That's
World
a
Cup.
Super
as far
impressive
as I could tell,
statistic.
I tried to look it up, but
yeah.
As far as I could tell, they're the first to play. Definitely
I wonder,
first to score.
I wonder where 1-year-old Napoleone was watching this game. I wonder if he was at the ground or if it was, you know.
He was actually leading the revolution in Fiji.
Oh, he was. He was he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's
going to be disputed at a club dinner in a few years' time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That kid's going to go far. Napoleone
Langa is still playing, by the way.
Yes, he's 35.
Yep, he has this year just left the Olympia Lions to go and play semi-pro in Fiji.
Oh, nice. Good for him.
Fijian running champions.
Good for him. He's never going to retire, is he?
Nope.
And fair play to him. He's an absolutely unreal player.
But to move back to Superboot himself.
Yes.
Koroduadua,
yeah,
who is as you say, a very impressive figure.
Yeah.
He was massive for a fullback at the time.
Yeah.
Like, at the time.
Well, he was part of the Suva police force.
And he still is. He still
is. Is he?
He received a medal on behalf from the Fijian government 3 years ago.
Oh my God.
Both rugby and the police.
What a guy.
Yep.
That's incredible. I didn't even realise that.
He's still a policeman officer.
Yeah, nobody's doing any crime out in Suva, no. Are they? Not with Superboot on patrol. Should we move on to the game itself, then?
Yeah, we should probably start, shouldn't we?
We've made a habit of waiting till we're half an hour into the podcast before we start talking about the game. But you know what? That's fair enough.
Look, we've got to get through the teams. And there's a lot of players worth introducing this time around.
Yes.
As well,
yeah, definitely. There's a lot of interesting points. Go
final
on.
Final point as well. Juan Lanza, who is on the left wing for Argentina.
Yeah.
His identical brother, Pedro, is on the bench.
Oh, I did notice that there was a double in names.
Identical twin.
I wasn't sure.
So they would go on. He goes on to play in the rest of the tournament. He doesn't get on in this game.
Right, okay.
The first pair of twins to ever play in a Rugby World Cup.
That's good.
Possibly the first brothers, but I think you had the
Hastings. You'd imagine six days in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hastings both play for Scotland.
I can't remember if Scott Hastings played in that game.
But regardless, impressive thing. There's
yes.
A final, like, family connection. There's a lot of family connections, a lot of firsts.
Yeah. It's why it's a retrospective podcast, man. So, yeah, so the game kicks off. It's generally quite a scrappy start to the game, isn't it? Fiji kind of struggle to get hold of the ball. They get penalised quite a lot.
Well,
the scrums are complete one-way traffic with Argentina walking all over them.
Very start of the game kind of tells us how we think things are going to go on. So Argentina win some line-out ball and they shuffle it right along. They do some nice stuff. The 13 has a nice little run then drops it. And like, I think Diego Cuesta Silva, that is a class player there.
He's quite good, to be fair. He's like quietly quite skillful.
I think those two, to say Hugo Porter, and we'll get onto this, might as well not have hands in this game.
Yeah.
Like, he is just booting everything he gets.
Yeah.
Whenever it does get to the two centres, to Tunez and Cuesta Silva, those are two little silkworms in the centres. Two little silkworms in midfield.
Sure.
And both of them are, like, deceptively incredibly skillful, and they have that, like, very Argentine balance about them.
Sure. They have their moments, don't they? Because they're both quite up and down throughout the game.
None of them really lead to anything, but when the two of them can catch the ball and have a tiny bit of space,
sure, yeah,
they're both really dangerous and really skillful
players. Yeah, yeah.
And I enjoyed watching them, even if I wouldn't necessarily want them in my team.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, Cuesta Silva has a little run. He drops the ball then afterwards. And what I didn't know the score going into this game.
Me neither.
Upset. And I thought this was going to be the story of the game. So Argentina knock it on. And then from the scrum, they drive Fiji right back off the ball. And I enjoyed the thing about them not having a hooker, because they don't bother hooking, which is
no, 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 no. They just walk on. They pretty much stamp on the ball and pop it.
They're so powerful, they drive over the ball. No one bothers hooking it back.
Yeah.
And they drive right to number 8's feet. They send it out right to Hugo Porter, who attempts a drop goal from 45 metres.
Yeah, and it's very wide.
I thought the story of the game was going to be Argentina were going to walk all over them and Porter's going to drop goals from everywhere.
Yeah.
And it turns out I was half right in that the story of the game is going to be Hugo Porter missing.
Yeah, yeah. It does make you think, because you see a lot of highlights of people nailing really like speculative drop goals from like the 80s and 90s. But watching this back, it makes you realise, because people were attempting them every 3 seconds, that some of them are going to stick.
Especially when you've got a kicker like Hugo Porter, who has a big boot, is incredibly accurate.
Definitely, definitely.
And, I mean, we'll run through this, but Hugo Porter has one of the, you know, if you just look back over his career, this is probably one of the games he's most desperate to forget.
Yeah, yeah. This, you know, we will have both, having grown up long after Hugo Porter's time, we will have both watched highlights package of him playing before and stuff like that. And we both recognise that he's a lot better than what we get on here, right?
Yeah, not that long after Hugo Porter's time. Because obviously, he announced his retirement to retire after this World Cup, because he was 36 at this World Cup.
Yeah.
He then comes out of retirement 3 years after this, when Argentina have an injury crisis at 10, plays 3 more games in 1990,
right.
Fly half,
having
not played rugby in 3 years, because he was on Sergio Parisse standard.
Yeah, yeah.
He then comes out of retirement again
the 2CPC
to play
gambit.
For the Argentina 15 in an invitational tournament in 1999. I think just because he fancied it and was bored.
Right, okay.
But this was like, he was like Argentina's sports minister at the time. He was like, he went on to be like a government figure, and he came out retirement for one game for Argentina A.
That's incredible. I'm pretty sure, because like, I've just checked, he's 70 now. I'm pretty sure in the time that we've been watching the Bermuda Classic, he has at some point played in it.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, he was still playing to a reasonably high standard when he was 49.
Yeah, yeah, which is seriously impressive. But yeah, this wasn't his finest day from the boot or out of hand.
No.
For Hugo Porter. But yeah, so there's, he does look quite one-dimensional in this game. And he does actually put in some really clever kicks.
Yeah, he does.
Even though they're quite easy to predict. Like, he does find grass the majority of the time. And he's playing against a really strong back three. So there's a lot to be said for Porter in this game. And also, he's playing alongside halfback Fabio Gomez, who is just infuriating to watch. Because he's like the world's earliest, most Argentine edition of Gareth Davis. That every yes. opportunity he would try and dummy and go himself. It's like, mate, you're the scrum half. It's your job to pass the ball. And there's a really just infuriating point early on where Porter has a 1v0 on the blind side. And Gomez spots it and tries to dummy around the his opposite number, the Fijian halfback, Tabalutu. And obviously just gets scragged because there was no way he was ever going to fall for the dummy. And you could just tell it was just selfish on Gomez's part. When Porter probably would have had a decent run down the wing there and made an opportunity. And it's just... it's annoying to watch.
The commentator towards the end, after he does a little... he has a lovely little pick and go. He goes through the middle and knocks it on.
Yeah.
As was the want back then.
Yeah.
Describes him as an all-or-nothing player who's either the best or worst player on the pitch every game.
Right,
and
okay.
And you get that vibe out of him.
Yeah, yeah. So Hugo Porter's first kick at goal, as you say, is one to forget. What I've written down here is he kicks it like me.
No, that's his second kick. His second kick.
Second kick. Oh, yeah, yeah, of course, his second kick.
So he misses a drop goal.
Yeah.
He then has a penalty from a similar range, 45 metres on the other side of the field. Misses that. And that is quite narrow. That is like, that one looks like it could go over.
Sure.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
And at this point, Argentina feel pretty, I'd imagine, justified in their tactics.
Yeah. Right? They should be ahead by some way, I think.
I said on the episode about Japan v. the USA. That Japan had the clearest game plan of any team we've seen so far. I think Argentina have overtaken them.
Yes, agreed.
Because for the first half an hour, you know exactly what they're doing every time they get the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredibly forward-dominated, and Hugo Porter is absolutely levering.
Trying to play in the right parts of the park, isn't he? And like, the backs actually look set to chase the kicks. It looks like he's actually intended and has been discussed, rather than just Porter going, oh yeah, I want a kick now, like all the other teams in the tournament.
And there is some variation to it. They do a really nice chip at one point in the first half. The silvery gathers then drops.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it, you know, it's there is stuff that's working, and it's quite a smart game plan.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically gone.
Certainly by the standard of this World Cup.
Yeah. Hugo, we want you to absolutely lever everything.
Yeah.
And he says, when they interview him post-match, and he seems to have just got out of the shower. Did you watch this?
Yes, I did. I did.
Yeah.
He was steaming. Not like
wet,
drunk.
Steaming.
But, yeah.
Has a towel round his neck.
Yeah.
Topless. And they interview him, and he kind of say, and he kind of has like an incredibly nasal voice, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
And he says words to the effect of, yeah, we thought we could just like kick the lever off the ball and we'd win.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were very surprised by how badly that went.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird because like there's parts of this where I think like Argentina probably should have won this game.
Oh, they, with the platform they have, they should win.
Yeah, exactly.
To say they are, I think it's like the seventh scrum is the first one Fiji win.
Yeah. Yeah, even and, like they're losing all the scrums on their own ball, and Argentina are marching them from there.
Yeah, and I mean, like we'll get onto it later, but Argentina scores try in the second half from a Fiji put in at the scrum.
Yes,
where they actually march them backwards off their own ball, and then march them back another 10 meters and score.
Yeah,
it's that level of dominance.
Sure,
it's the most dominant scrum we've seen at this World Cup, or either the World Cup's we've covered. I think it's the most dominant any scrum's been.
100%, 100%. Yeah, but yeah, no. So Porter gets the shot at goal. And doesn't get it off the floor. It's like it's an embarrassingly bad kick from just an all-time great fly half. But like the commentators are saying, like, is it the ball? Is it, you know, the turf? What is it? Like, are the kickers just having bad days? Because it's obviously a theme throughout this World Cup, which does give me some hope that there's a reason why people are still going for goal in these speculative angles when realistically, from what we can tell, they're never going to get it. So maybe, you know, it's much like 2011 where we had that context of knowing how good the kickers were, but they were all missing them anyway, like Johnny Wilkinson in that Argentina game at the start of the 2011 World Cup. But then, Fiji get a penalty.
Just before the one East Skags.
But
Fiji get a penalty.
Yes.
Inside their own half, like 10 metres inside their own
half.
And something absolutely mad happened that made me, like, wheel back my chair.
Yeah. So, one super boot steps up. Our friend Severo Coladuadua steps up and he points at the post. And the referee goes, like, oh, good one, mate.
Yeah.
And, like, he genuinely does, like, kind of, like, giggle. Like, it's Jim Fleming, MBE, is the referee.
Mm.
And it kind of, like, looks at him and is like, are you sure you want to go for the post? And he's like, yeah, I'm serious. And, like, starts digging into the turf with his heel, puts the ball down, and, yeah, goes for goal from 59 metres out and takes two steps back and strikes the ball.
And you know what? To say it's a leather ball in 1987 from an amateur player kicking it from 59 metres, and I've never seen, without wanting to generalise, Fijians aren't known for having long-range kickers.
No. Kickers. Yeah, I think it's an entirely fair observation.
Argentina and South Africa are. Argentina and South Africa have always produced really long-range kickers.
Yeah.
Fiji, less so.
Yeah.
And yet, and it's just wide the post, and it comes down about 5 metres short.
Yeah.
It's a pretty bloody good attempt.
It's a good effort. And you know what? I really, really liked it, him going for that. His first penalty of the World Cup. Just that whole statement of intent thing, going like, I'm going to kick this from everywhere. If you give away penalties, I'm going to try do my best to punish you.
And watching those first 10 minutes leading into that, I was getting vibes of, you know, anyone familiar with this podcast and this and the channel in general will know that Fiji v Namibia is regarded as one of the all-time classics of rugby.
It is.
Yeah, it is All Blacks Wallabies 2000.
Yeah.
In our book.
Yes.
I was getting vibes of that for the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Argentina was so forward dominated. I thought of that at one point. Fiji were just chucking everything around. And then suddenly, bloody...
I did get Tynes Kotsa vibes from Super
Yeah,
Boots.
Exactly. I was about to say, but then suddenly Tynes Kotsa turns up playing for Fiji.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Hold on. They've both got Tynes Kotsa.
I also loved it because one of the most well-regarded fly halves in world rugby had just missed a very gettable penalty. And then this Fijian lad just steps up and says, yeah, I'm just going to kick this over from 60 metres just to rub it in. And I just thought that was fun.
Where I think it's after one of Porter's misses, where he, as in like his, the lady's cheating with, where Coradua-Dua thumps the ball back from inside his own 22 and he kicks it out of touch and it hits about halfway and the crowd let out this incredible noise like, oh, I can't believe what we just seen.
The crowd
seen.
Love him.
It's bloody super boot. He's
Also, I love the crowd erupting into laughter when he opts for goal on that one.
Yes.
Just like, is this guy serious? He's going for bloody goal?
Super boot.
Yeah.
Apparently
I love super boot.
Had kicked a goal from around that range at that ground a few years earlier.
Okay.
And the commentators talked about that as like, I couldn't believe my eyes. They talked about like it was one of Jesus' miracles. Like he'd cause a lame man to walk.
At this point, about 10 minutes into this game, I nearly texted you saying, I just love Super Boot as a character. And the commentators just at one point gave up on saying his name and just called him Super Boot instead. And I just find him fun as a character, as this Fijian fullback. And he sounds like one of those players that you would never, like, that played before the televised. Like Arthur Gold, who, like, allegedly wants back heel to drop goal or did an overhead one or something like that. There's a load of, like, stories that nobody knows if they're real about Arthur Gold. Super Boot reminds me of that vibe.
Can I give you a fun fact about Super Boot?
Yes.
Super Boot holds the all-time Fijian record for most conversions in a match.
Okay.
And I wonder if this is bettered by any... There can't be more than like four players that have done this. He scored 18 conversions
Jesus.
In one game against New Ireland.
New Ireland?
Yep.
Is that a thing?
No, the
I thought you meant like New England.
Now, this is the incredible thing, right? The final score was Fiji 120, New 4, right?
Right.
But the score sheet has New Ireland down as not having scored any tries, conversions, or penalties.
Was there an own try at hand?
I guess so. Maybe Superboot kicked it so hard.
Kicked two conversions through his own posts.
Yeah, he kicked one conversion so hard it went right around the world and came back through his own posts. So it counted.
Yeah, that sounds like him. That sounds like him. That's an interesting stat you got there. I'm here for the hot Super Boot facts.
He also scored 10 conversions in one game against Belgium in 1989.
Oh, wow. That man loves a conversion, clearly.
I also, huge fan of the fact that Super Boot kicked 5 drop goals in his career.
Oh, wow.
I want to track them down.
Yeah,
Ruddy Data,
yeah.
Go and make a Super Boot compilation.
Yeah, Ruddy. Please, Ruddy. So yeah, then he's at it again. He goes for another 145 metres. Again, narrowly misses, but he is past the crossbar at this point. He's just wide. He has the distance. And then pretty much from the resulting line out of there, Fiji get an opportunity. Argentina go for a clearance. It's Gomez himself tries to clear the ball. And if you've got Hugo Porter on your team, let him do the kicking. Especially in 1987 before box kicking was popularised.
But no, because he has to step out of two tackles and he just randomly thumps it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think he wants to take the kicking on himself, but he's almost left no choice.
Yeah. But either way, he's charged down by Diego Cash, isn't it?
Mm. No, that is Hugo Porter.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's the first one. The 12 tries to clear it.
Right.
Fiji then get downfield. Argentina turn the ball over or they knock it on.
Okay.
And then from there, so Hugo Porter. And right. When I watched the replay, at first I thought it was just a charge down. Then when you watch it back, when you watch the thing again, Porter does just kick it into Cash's head.
Oh, does he? Does he?
He just kicks it straight into Cash. I think it's not even his head. It's like his sort of like area just around his shoulder just before it blow his throat.
Right, okay. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Didn't even clock
he
that.
He kicks it very low, like Sam Davis style.
Okay. So yeah, Cash gets a run with the ball, throws a nice little dummy, and then pops...
Wait, no, Cash is the hooker for Argentina.
What am I on about?
Neither was I.
Neither Villawasi, yeah. The Fijian hooker. Oh my god, I've had a right blunder there. Yeah, anyway, he gets the ball.
I've went for it as well. I also called him.
Yeah. So he throws a dummy and then throws a nice little pop pass back on the inside. No, it's Wale who scores the try for Fiji, the blindside flanker, who I don't know if it's just because he's fast and called Penthilly, but I just constantly kept thinking he's like some distant relative of Penthilly Yato.
The moment I found out he was called Penthilly, it suddenly made sense to me.
Yes.
I was like, oh, okay, they've always got to have, at any one time, a really quick flanker called Penthilly.
Yeah. He was fun. Because he didn't play like a flanker, but more just like one of those players who would just roam around and just try and do everything, especially in defence, and I enjoyed him. I enjoyed him a lot. But yeah, so Fiji
very
went
6-0 up. Of Miyamoto for Japan a couple of games ago.
A couple of weeks ago, yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed him. I enjoyed him lots. But yeah, Fiji went 6-0 up. Mm. And then suddenly, straight from the kickoff, just start uploading absolutely everything. And they really had like their tails wagging at this point.
Yeah, they really, really suddenly become Fijian.
Yeah.
And the commentators mentioned that this is a thing that apparently happens, that Fiji, once they get a bit of confidence, once they get ahead, they tend to just really double down on it.
Yeah. And even when offloads weren't on, they were still throwing them. Other than Super Boot, who was still trying to kick everything.
Bloody Super Boot.
The other 14 of them were like, no, let's offload absolutely everything. And he's like, no, we want to play in their half. It's like, no, Super Boot, we want to offload everything. I don't care if we lose the ball.
They do shortly after this as well. Argentina look like they're starting to get back into this once they start knocking it on Fiji from their countless offloads.
Yeah.
And Argentina actually get a penalty from a scrum, which feels rare.
Mm.
Porter misses again. He also misses another drop goal in this period.
Yeah.
Which brings it up to four misses now, two penalties, two drop goals. And then, wouldn't you know it, Fiji get a bit downfield. They get just into the opposition half and they're given a penalty. And who should step up but the one, the only, Corradua-Dua.
Yes.
Good old bloody Super Boot.
I love him. And he nails it. 9-0 to Fiji.
Yeah.
And at this point, you think, how the hell are Argentina not in this game?
I should mention
totally dominating
as well.
Set piece. Yeah.
Argentina have just won a penalty, at which point Jorge Allen just shoves one of the Fijians, just kind of barges them off the ball in order to get it. And the referee goes, no, you're a dickhead, I'm penalising you.
He was a proper penalty machine, was Allen or Ahen or however you want to pronounce it.
Can we also have a moment to talk about Jim Fleming, the Scottish referee?
Yes.
There's no ref mic, but you can hear every decision he made.
Yeah.
So is he screaming them all?
He must be. I also like how he turned up in full Scotland kit instead of the referee's kit that everyone else has been wearing so far in the World Cup.
Because that was a big thing. They made a deal out that this is the first time they had a referee's kit for this World Cup.
Yeah.
Before this, you just wore your national union's kit. And clearly he went...
Didn't get the memo.
I'm not having that. This is my chance to represent my country.
My first, before I even start watching this game, I checked to see if he's any relation to James Fleming, the Scotland Sevens player. Sadly, he is not.
No.
Good story.
Is he related to anyone else called Fleming?
Not that good. Well, yes, presumably. but
yeah,
not
his dad.
Yeah, his dad is presumably called Fleming, or maybe his mum, who knows. But no, no relation there. Anyway, so yeah, you wonder why Argentina aren't in this game. And then suddenly, Fiji have an injury. Tabulutu is carried off injured. And I find this particularly interesting because there aren't medics carrying him off. It's just his back line start carrying him off.
Two of his own players carry him off.
So Tomasi Farmer's like, yeah.
Yeah, Tomasi Farmer Senior and Super Boot.
Yeah.
So he's got more than just his boot.
But do you notice where they put him down?
They just dump him on the touchline.
They sit him next to the World Cup.
Really?
Yes. The World Cup is stood on the sideline. Oh. And they just put their scrum off there to just look at it. And they have him facing away from the pitch, looking at the World Cup. It would be a good gambit, that, actually. Pretend your scrum half is injured if he's quite nippy. And then just put him next to the World Cup strategically. No one's looking at him. Nicks it. Goes off with it. He's not really injured. He can run.
Yeah. The pick was the dog gambit. Just steal the World Cup. See what happens.
Yeah.
We find it in a hedge in Fiji in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, exactly. And hey, if they try and take it, we've got their top policeman.
Yeah. Oh, man. He can arrest anyone trying to steal it.
Exactly.
Because there's no one in... Can you imagine, right? Set the scene, right? You are in Fiji. You have just committed a crime, okay? You have committed a big crime. What crime have you just committed?
Arson.
You've committed arson. You have burnt down the
chapel.
You have burnt down the very profitable cavachu fields of John Zande.
Of course I have.
Because you were very jealous.
Sorry, I confused that with the chapel quite a lot.
But people are after you. There's a warrant out for you, okay?
Yeah.
People are looking for you.
There is a hunt.
You're hiding at home. You think you're safe.
Yeah.
At which point, you hear a knock on the door. It's the Fijian police. They call. Thank you. Good Foley. Good Bernard. There's a knock on the door. It's the Fijian police. You think, it's fine. I've got the most reinforced door in all of Fiji.
Which I specifically requested.
Yeah.
From Daniel Carpo, who makes furniture.
But, wouldn't you know it, the member of the Fijian police force sent out to track you down is Severa Koradua-Dua. And so, when he goes to kick down that door, it flies straight off the hinges into your face, knocks you out in one go. You are arrested for arson and stealing the World Cup because you're a scrum half and that's what you all do.
And he kicks my ass and it dies.
That is the most useful man in all of Fiji. You'd want to kick down a door if you're trying to find someone.
Yeah, he has a golden
He's
boot.
Perfect.
Yeah.
He is Super Boot. He has the Super Boot. The Super Boot of Super Boot.
I'm aware we're going on about him a lot, but he's very, very involved, both in this game and in the Fijian police force. It takes some talking about. Yeah.
He got a medal for being the best Fijian police forceman.
Yeah, exactly. That really, really takes some doing.
He was awarded a medal Fiji's 50th anniversary of its independence.
Oh, really?
He was one of the 32 citizens selected to get a medal.
Oh, what a guy. I do think as well, if they did steal the World Cup, Fiji care that much about rugby that they probably would write it into their laws that if anyone tried to steal it back, that was punishable by death.
Yes. he also, I want to mention more Super Boot facts, played for 10 years for the Fijian Police Force's team.
Oh, really?
They have a rugby team. And can you imagine them in the
I bet they were unreal.
Because the hooker as well for Fiji also was a policeman officer.
Right.
Naivo Alemassa.
Right.
And we'll get on to it. I've got another thing about him when we'll go through the rest of the thing.
But yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll carry on with the game, shall we?
Mm.
The first point where Nalanga gets the ball and my God, he can shift. You just suddenly see a burst of acceleration. Like, he gets tackled, but you suddenly go like, oh, okay, I can see the genes that have transferred down here. Porter misses another drop goal and goes 0-4.
Yep. It's really not a good day for him, is it?
Bless him. And then Fiji get downfield and they really do look quite dominant in anything that's not a scrum at this point. And they score another try as they get downfield. It is set up by our friend Sande, who has a nice little bit of a run and sort of a sort of pop off the floor. It's slightly sort of intruded, But yeah. A Fijian player drives over. We can't really see who it is. I think it's Savai the lock.
I'm pretty sure.
Is
it?
Right.
Ngora takes it and then offloads it, I think.
Right, okay.
I think it might be Savai, who, yeah, it's him or is maybe the winger. The commentators say a few times, we don't know who scored that
shot. Yeah, yeah.
Which is just excellent work. I believe the try was awarded to Hooker, to Navawawasa.
Yeah, okay.
Which is a really difficult name.
It is a difficult name.
Learnt it. Yeah. Like, it's, I'm sorry to be like that and to get it wrong.
Yeah.
It's one of those names I need to hear people say a few times to get it into my head.
Like, you get used to the name Metusela Talambula, don't you? Whereas
exactly,
the first time I said it, I would have said it wrong.
So, yes. So, I believe it's him who finishes it. That's who the... It's a, on the official World Cup listing, he's who it's awarded to.
Okay.
But as I said, at the time, they had no bloody clue.
No. But yeah, no, it was you know, a fairly decent try. Pretty poor defence from Argentina, if you're completely honest. But it's a good run by Sande to set that up. Not just good at business, he's also good at rugby.
Yeah.
That's why he's in the national
team.
The
Argentine centres have a few moments then towards the end of the first half where they combine and link up and each of them have a few little steps and runs.
Yeah.
And none of them come to anything. They're enormous fun and I enjoyed watching the two of them.
Yeah.
Because they clearly understand each other and play off each other incredibly
well. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And again, like, I think they had a good understanding of Porter and when he was going to kick and stuff. Like, there's a couple of up and unders that they actually chased very well. And luckily, Koladudu is very good at the high ball at moments in this game. And he does catch a couple of really difficult ones that Porter puts him in a bit of a spot of bother. So, yeah, no, but you're right. Those centres did have a good understanding of each other when they start to tick.
And speaking of understanding, there's a moment in which the commentator says, well, obviously none of these Argentines can speak English, but I reckon a few of the Fijians could probably speak Spanish, so they might be able to crack their line-out code.
It's a very interesting line of commentary, that, isn't it? When you start speculating on which of the Fijians might or might not be able to speak Spanish.
And I think it's safe to say none of the Argentines can speak Fijian.
Yes.
Which he then says.
Yes.
But he reckons none of them can speak English.
No.
When Hugo Porter obviously can speak English because he's done it repeatedly in press and it after the game.
Oh, yeah. Didn't even think about that. But, I mean, he doesn't speak in Fijian, so he's got a valid point.
Half a valid point.
Yeah, fair enough. I really like how the half ends.
Mm.
Because the tired prop for Fiji, Naituku, gets the ball in open field, and it's probably the second or third time in the game he gets the ball, and he's not the biggest prop, to be fair. Like, he's quite fast for his size, or just for a prop generally, especially at this age. Mm. And then, interestingly, he just wants to get on the act and kicks the ball. However, his kick goes horribly wrong, and he barely gets any distance on it. And then, luckily, as the ball crosses the touchline, which it only just does, he then turns to the referee like, oh yeah, that's me trying to take half time. Is it half time? And the referee blows up for half time, and then he goes like, oh yeah, 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 that's what I was going for. Which he clearly wasn't. But when the kick went badly, he doubled down, and I respect it, because we've all been there.
It is what friend of the pod Tom Savage would refer to as a funt.
It is a proper funt. Yes.
It's a classic funt.
Yeah.
He is going for a chip or a kick for himself to chase, and instead he puts it into touch 5 metres in front of him.
Yeah, yeah. But it's fine, he was deliberately trying to take half time because it's that same, he's just been a good tactical player, you know.
Wale is absolutely hyped when half time goes. He is jumping up and down, screaming and shouting in excitement at what their team have just done, going in ahead.
Yeah.
Which, again, as I said, they're 13-0 up. This was a huge upset. Argentina were massive favourites.
Big half for Fiji.
Huge half. Huge half. But you look at it, you can see a way back for Argentina in the second half.
You can. You absolutely
can. They're so dominant that you feel like they can quite easily score two tries.
Or
Hugo Porter can nail 14 drop goals.
It does feel slightly fluky, the two tries that Fiji did get.
Mm.
And you do have it, the impression that Argentina have 4 or 5 tries in them. And they mentioned the Romania game where Zimbabwe went in the lead in half time.
Yeah.
It very much could be the same story as that. And I think that I kind of expected it to be.
Mm, yeah, I was expecting Argentina to come back into it quite a lot.
But pretty much the first chance Argentina get in the second half, they get a penalty from about 50 metres out. And Porter goes for goal, which is an interesting call. But
it's clearly they had a tactic that they thought was going to work. And I get it. Because Hugo Porter at the time is one of the best goal kickers in the world.
Of course. And I understand, you know, like, they want to be on the board, don't they? But
yeah. And they're clearly going, well, Fiji are going to keep doing this because the discipline is not great.
Yeah.
Savai, and I'll mention this later, but he apparently had a reputation as a penalty machine.
Oh, okay.
And they were very much banking on that.
Oh, I did. He mentioned he got sent off in the game against Canterbury.
He got sent off against Australia, I think. Oh, okay. No, in a tour of Australia.
Right.
In a game, one of the warm-up games.
Yeah.
And that was when sending off were very, very rare.
Of course.
When people didn't play Wales.
Yes. Yeah, no, that does make sense. But yeah, Porter misses the shot at goal, and Superboot just sends him back to his 22, man. Just goes, I'll have that.
And there's like, the crowd erupts at
they
him
love
giving
him,
the
man.
Ball back.
They love the fact that there's a Fijian who's clearly played football growing up as well as rugby.
But he boots the ball from his own 22 into the opposition 22.
Yeah.
Like, not into touch, he just kicks it long. As happens all the time in modern rugby. Bounces before the 22, bounces into the 22.
Yeah.
And the crowd are like, oh my God, have you seen what he's just done?
Yeah.
Have you seen what bloody Superboot's just done? It's Superboot.
Yeah.
It's our favourite player of all time, Superboot. We love Superboot. We're going to talk about Superboot forever.
What a guy. We're going to continue to talk about him as well. I think every episode of the podcast
absolutely.
Will have a dedicated section to Superboot as well. So Fiji then, they look a bit lost in the opposition 22 when they've got the ball, but they're kind of just going side to side a little bit. And then the most Fijian thing ever happens.
Oh, mate, yeah. I mean, it is the stand-up-and-take-note moment of the whole game.
Yeah, yeah.
It is the standout moment.
Yeah.
It is the moment I kind of sat and were like, I think I just have. My notes just say Jesus in all caps.
Mine says bloody hell.
Yeah, that does it. That covers it.
Also says that's ball, insanely Fijian.
Yeah, the ball gets out to Kavakinki Nalanga on the wing. And wouldn't you know it, his son did get the genes from somewhere.
Insane finish.
Absolutely mad.
He appears to be boxed in twice.
Yeah.
He
looks boxed in by Lanza, his opposite number,
yeah.
who is pretty much up in his face
yeah.
when he just kind of wriggles round him. And the commentator refers to it as like, oh, look at the powers he breaks out of it, like his son would have done. And it's not even that. It's not that. He just steps around him and goes.
Yeah.
Like it's acceleration and a burst as he takes the ball.
Yeah, no, he just ghosts on the outside and it's an insane finish.
Mm.
And yeah, he finishes it on the right touchline and guess what?
Well, he's got...
The conversion is nailed.
Well, Selvac's coming across as well.
Mm.
And he, instead of trying to step him or trying to beat him or riding anything or looking for support, he just goes on the outside, burns him.
Yeah.
And yeah, scores in the corner.
Really silky finish. And
yeah.
It's one of those tries that it's really strange because you kind of only see those scored by players with Fijian blood in a
yes.
strange way. It sounds like an extreme stereotype, but you so rarely,
well,
so commonly see those tries scored by Fijians.
You see them scored by Fijians and Argentines.
That's true. That last step was kind of reminiscent of that Amorosina one against Scotland, wasn't it?
Amorosina against Scotland in my head.
Yeah.
And you obviously just mentioned it since as well, but that did go through my head as I was watching.
Yeah.
It's a real standout moment of individual skill.
No, it was unbelievable.
Rocco Waliula takes the conversion as well for some reason.
Oh, of course he did. It was because it was from the right-hand side and he's left-footer. So
right,
Fiji had this thing for conversions that if it was from the right, he would take it. And if it was from the left, then Superboot would take it. But yeah, so Fiji gets to a 19-0 lead before Hugo Porter makes the decision to go for 3 points, which he does get from a penalty in the Fijian 22. It's questionable, isn't it? Because there's a part of me that thinks, well, teams should go for penalties more because 4 points for a try kind of isn't the correct proportion. Four points for a try isn't enough sort of to justify turning down the 3 points shot at goal. But then again, 6 points, you know, it's two penalties, isn't it? So it really does depend on that. But yeah, it's an interesting one. But he does get the conversion. He does get Argentina on the board, which I think is very important at this stage.
Commentator at this point, the co-coms, the colour commentators they were referred to still at the time,
yeah,
who spent the entire first half talking about how, and the pre-game and the lead-in and the first part, spends the bit talking about how Argentina just needs to use the forwards and power game them off it and so on.
Yeah.
And around the time they kick this penalty, he starts going, I keep saying Argentina just need to play through the hands. They just need to go through the hands. I've been saying this the whole time. I've been saying this. Argentina are mad for trying to play with the forwards. Why don't they use their backs and pass the ball more? Like, mate, you were saying the exact opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
About 10 minutes ago.
And at this point, this sort of like middle 20 minutes of the second half, the Argentine backline is shite. And I've written that down multiple times in my notes that they really can't string a couple of passes together. Like the one point where I noticed Tournez in the second half was when there's a point where he gets the ball, looks really composed on it, and he has a 2-on-1 and pass it into touch.
Yes. Yeah. Should we talk about the moment of the Argentine backline being shit? Or do you want to save that for Dick of the Day?
I think we should save that back.
We should save that back, okay.
For anybody wanting to see that passing to touch, it is on the video. It is 1 hour and 6 minutes in on the world feed version. Just because I've got that noted down. But yes, I think we save back the moment that we were just talked about, which does immediately follow this point, but we'll come on to that. So not long after this, Fiji nearly score the try of the tournament. And it's unbelievable. They start on their own 10-metre line. Nalanga makes a nice run, pops off the floor.
Oh, yeah.
And they just string together all of these insane, proper, like, Leone Nakarawa one-handed basketball over the top passes until it ends up on the left wing where Tuvula, who is the left wing for Fiji, has the ball in his hands. And suddenly, everyone realises they're knackered and don't want to keep up with him. And he goes for the corner himself, correctly so, because they string out these amazing passes. Mm. And in fairness, Salvat puts in a brilliant tackle around his ankles.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I am such a fan of Sebastian Salvat.
Yeah.
And we kind of haven't talked about him that much. There's a moment just before this where Fiji stab through a kick for someone to chase and it goes far too long. And Salvat is under no pressure but dives on the ball to secure it.
I love that.
And he's just, as I said before, he's such a body on the line.
Yeah, he's just so all
and
out.
And he does like the Rob Carney thing of diving through the air to regather a ball at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
There's one point Argentina try an accidental cross kick and he does a proper like lobs himself for it, regathers it and then spins into touch because he can't quite keep it in.
Yeah.
I absolutely love this guy. Like he is, yes, Superboot is flashier, but Salvat is such a, like, he's the fullback I'd want in my team.
Yeah. I'm excited to see him play against potentially Italy or somebody that Argentina might score a few tries past. I'm excited to see what he might be able to bring out of that team.
I'm also really excited to know that we've got another 2 World Cups of him.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
He's in the Argentina team.
That he's going to develop. We'll see that. Yeah. That's a really good point, actually. That is very exciting. That we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah. Diego Cuesta Silva also remains in the Argentina team for quite a while.
Okay,
as well.
Okay, interesting.
He goes on to win 60-odd caps, which was a lot
in
this era.
Oh, wow. That is a lot. But yeah, so Fiji nearly scored his try of the tournament. Nobody supports Tuvula on the wing, so he just kind of like aimlessly has to try and pop the ball up. He has no other option because he's getting turned over either way. And the ball gets just booted into touch by Argentina, 1 metre out from their goal line, which is notable. Because after this incredible build-up, Fiji scored the world's most underwhelming try.
It is the worst try of the Rugby World Cup so far. And bear in mind, the first try was a penalty try.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's worse than that. I hate penalty tries.
I know you do. I know you do. So yeah, so there
Then again, this try is dog shit.
We've mentioned before, right? Obviously, no lifting in lineouts at the time. Argentina do get penalised in the first half for lifting out a lineout.
Did they? I missed
that. Which I think is quite funny.
Yeah.
And they don't really lift anyone. I think someone just like leans on another player and then jumps.
Jumps too high and gets penalised.
Yeah. And they're penalised for lifting at the lineout. But then in the second half, obviously, as well, they didn't bring scrums or lineouts back 5 metres.
Yeah. Right? Very significant.
An inch out from the line. The lineout takes place an inch out from the line. And this ball was put out an inch out from the line. So the lineout takes place an inch out from the line. And Fiji have kind of struggled at the lineout. Like all set piece, Argentina have been dominant in.
Yeah.
They have won most of the lineouts, a lot of the lineouts against the head. And they've won basically every scrum against the head.
Yeah.
This one, the hooker, Noah Vomassa, nails the throw into the middle. Like it is a spot on throw into the middle, straight into the arms of Itea Savea.
The tactic is just throw it to the biggest guy. Yeah. 1 inch out from the try line.
So they chuck it to Savai, who was a player for Waikato at the time, which is obviously where the game was taking place.
Of course.
So it was a really popular guy as well at the time.
Yeah.
He grabs the ball, plucks it out of the air, and falls over.
Yeah.
He scores the decisive try.
Yeah, yeah. And because the Argentines had the audacity to even look at the ball at any point, that try became undefendable.
Yeah. It was undefendable. All he had to do to score it was win the line out.
Yeah.
There's not even like receiving the ball, bringing it down, taking it down. Yeah. He literally catches the ball from the line out and falls over.
Yeah.
And he scores.
Yeah. It's weird because like it reminds me of like the one term where I played rugby in school, like in PE lessons. And you have a PE teacher doing the rules who doesn't know the intricacies of it, that your lineout goes 5 metres out. That's the sort of try that would be scored in that.
Yes.
Because I literally remember being scored in that, where you throw it to the biggest player and he just falls over because no one wants to tackle him.
Yeah.
That is the vibe of this in the World Cup. which is being stolen by Fujin Scamarth. So yeah, after that build-up, this is an incredibly underwhelming try, but they all count for the same.
They all count for the same.
Especially, well, they count for more if you get the conversion, which Super Boot does!
You've got bloody Super Boot kicking for you, so why wouldn't you get the conversion?
Yeah.
It's bloody Super Boot.
Exactly. I then enjoyed, straight after this, the two... The Fiji, that really, really popped the cork at this point.
Mm.
Like, there's a couple of, like, Mkolo, who's playing seven for Fiji, just aimlessly booting the ball every time he gets it. Like, every single time.
First cap as well.
It's his first cap!
He's a man, first cap, and he is a man desperate for chaos.
Like, every time he catches the ball, as soon as Fiji are in the lead, and, like, have a decent lead, he is kicking all of the time.
Yep.
And I don't think there's a point where he gets the ball and just carries it, other than, I think there's one that maybe leads to a try at some point. But... yeah, he's kicking the ball all of the time. And I think my favourite point is there's a bit where everybody just starts, instead of throwing passes normally, everyone's throwing backhanded ones instead, even when it's not even necessary. And there's a bit where Super Boot does like a dummy and goes on the outside and then throws an out the back offload without realising he's stepped into touch. And then Fiji just keep throwing these out the back offloads, not knowing the touch judge just put his flag up like 30 metres further down the pitch.
It's very, very good. It's very fun.
Yeah.
And again, both teams by this point, by the last 15 minutes, Argentina start chucking it about.
Yeah.
And you kind of, it's kind of like watching their evolution from 2007 to 2015 happen in real time.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. I get that.
Because they go from being incredible, like full dominated to the point in which they don't even pass the back. Like it's horrendously full dominated.
Yeah.
To being just offloading every single ball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they actually do manage to get a bit of purchase about out of it and sort of go downfield. Yeah. There's a point that where Lanza, who's playing on the wing for Argentina, drops the ball.
Yeah, like when
he probably should have caught
like
it.
A run-in.
But yeah, when he had a really good opportunity to score. And in fairness, it was Cuesta Silva put him in loads of space by taking out two Fijian defenders.
But then you've got, you then have Argentina have a scrum shortly after that. And they are the ball is going over the try line when Fiji collapse it. And they are inches out from scoring. And that is a clear as day penalty try. Nowadays, it would be given as a penalty try.
Yeah, and a yellow card.
Yeah, exactly. I guess at the time, obviously, there wasn't yellow cards.
Yeah.
But also, there probably wasn't that precedent of
scrum
powering the ball over in that way. People look for actually the shove over try rather than collapsing a scrum.
Forwards, we need to start scrumming.
So no penalty try is given. Argentina then go again. They get another scrum. They get a reset from it. At which point, Gabriel Tavana, the number 8.
Yes.
Picks and goes right away the moment the ball's at his feet, rather than waiting, because they're shoving him over the line again as forwards.
Yeah.
And he knocks it on an inch short of the line. But this is given as a knock-on over the line, which at the time was a 22-metre drop.
Yeah, that was startling, wasn't it?
So, Super Boot takes it quickly before anyone's back, thumps it as long as he can, because he's bloody Super Boot.
Yeah.
And only Salva is back, and he's got two Fijians herring down on him, and he just puts the ball, he just gets close to the touchline, puts the ball as close as he can.
Yeah.
So Fiji get the line out about 30 metres out.
Yeah, yeah. Good old Super Boot. But I think that what is important here is Argentina actually, with about 10 minutes to go, realise they should really target the scrum, because that's the one area where they're just totally dominating, and they start opting for scrums from penalties and stuff, realising they need to score some tries. I think that there was a bit of a lack of leadership from people other than Porter. Porter being a fly half. Like, a bit of a lack of leadership in the pack to recognise that that's what they needed to do.
Yes.
And that they needed to take scrums and really target the set piece. And, you know, maybe do some mauls and stuff like that, because they'd probably drive him over.
They do one from a tap penalty, where they have Diego Cash set up, and as though they're going to crash to him. And so they run a move that goes behind the back to someone else who then mauls.
Like a really shit war move.
Really shit war.
Yeah. However, Argentina do get some joy. There's a point where Lanza suddenly becomes class.
What happens there?
It was
he does like the slyest step and slide
beautiful
the defense. It really is, and you think it's going to be one of the greatest solo tries
you've ever seen. Yeah, he goes for a really nice chip over, which is actually well placed.
Yeah. Really good chip, and then he just drops it. He's obviously got Super Boot getting across as well, trying to beat him to the ball. And he panics under the sheer presence because it's bloody Super Boot.
Yeah.
And he knocks the ball on.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because it could have been
one. He flashes up his police badge and then Lanza just drops the ball.
Yeah, it doesn't want his door kicked in. Lanza could have scored one of the all-time great tries that would have still been shown to this day.
Yeah.
It would have come up on highlight compilations all the time. Yeah. As Argentina's best World Cup moments.
Yeah.
But alas.
Yeah. But the good news is they get a scrum from the knock-on.
Yeah. Well, Fiji get the scrum, but obviously Argentina get the ball from it.
Yeah. It doesn't matter which scrum I puts the ball in. It's Argentina's scrum. And they score what might be an accidental try or might be a penalty try. I'm not really sure.
I think they know what they... Well, the thing is listed officially as a penalty try.
Okay.
But I think the number 8 does dive on it.
Right. I had a feeling. The thing is, because both teams have white on their kit, Fiji playing white, Argentina playing blue and white, it was hard to tell who it was diving on the ball. Because I did wonder if it was the Fijian replacement scrum half who dived on the ball, so it would have been a penalty try. Either way, Argentina finally get 6 points.
Yeah. I mean, it's deserved. They do deserve to score a
try.
Yeah. Like, the scoreboard does flatter Fiji a bit, but Fiji were the only team able to utilise their strengths.
Yes.
Like, both teams had strengths.
Definitely.
Fiji actually made them count.
I think that's an entirely fair assessment of the game. But Argentina suddenly become good after that try.
Yeah.
And suddenly, like, they have
the best passes of play.
Yeah, this incredible flowing attack where Salvat throws a really nice, like, reverse pass, which is beautiful. And both of their centres are, like, really nicely timing passes. There's two really good dummies they throw. And then bloody Lanza gets the ball and starts running backwards. It's just...
I mean, look, should we... We're coming on to the end of the game.
Yeah.
Should we do the final whistle and talk about Dick of the Day?
I mean...
Because we've got a lot
before we get there, last time I watched a super boot.
Okay.
Because... with about 2 minutes to go, he plays dead on the floor in front of the referee.
Yes. And Hugo Porter comes over and starts telling the referee he's not in.
Yeah. And the crowd are all giggling, like, for both sets of fans are all giggling over Superboot, like, really dramatically playing dead. No idea why he's doing it.
They're trying to run the clock down. He's trying to waste time.
Right, okay. That's very smart, though.
And Hugo Porter is really furious with this and is, like, walking over to him and almost kicking him to check he's alive.
Yeah.
And, like, complaining to the referee, really hates this, really angry with this.
And I love just the pure shithousing he does. Like, there's one great kick he does where he's running backwards and he still gets, like, 40 metres on it whilst in reverse. And then at the end, the way he kicks the ball out for full time is he puts the ball down as though he's going for goal. So he puts it on the floor and then just boots it into touch instead.
Yes, Fiji have a penalty and he lines it up as though he's going to kick for goal and kicks it out.
Yeah, just to be a bastard. And I love it.
And the commentators do say, oh, he hasn't lost his sense of humour.
Yeah.
And he's known for being like a joker.
Yeah.
Because he's bloody super boot.
Yeah. I've got a lot of time for him. I think, so yeah, we'll wrap this up then. Do you want to start Man of the Match or Dick of the Day?
Should we do Man of the Match quickly?
Yes.
Because I feel like we've got a lot of time to talk about Dick of the Day.
Man of the Match is Superboot. Man of the Match is Superboot by a long stretch for me. I just love him. I love him. He's like my favourite discovery of this World Cup so far, I think. He's just, in a way, he's the least Fijian player ever because he's all about kicking. But he's also the most Fijian player ever.
Yes.
Because of the way he has this reliance on it, but also such a sense of humour about the way he plays.
Absolutely.
And he's just so mad shit. Like, I mean, I talk a lot about Ramil Gaisin's, like, shithousing and the way he kicks the ball. He's the Fijian equivalent of that.
I think there is something impossibly Fijian about Super.
Yes.
Because he basically built his career and he became a really beloved fan favourite.
Yeah.
Off the fact that he had one attribute that no one else in Fiji did.
Yes.
And he rode that so hard.
And was still unpredictable. At the same time.
He's bloody Superboot.
Yeah.
You know? We all know he's Superboot.
So who's your Man of the Match?
So, I really like Sebastian Salvat. I think he's excellent.
Yeah.
But I can't give it to an Argentine
player.
No,
of course not.
They lose by
19
points.
They were not
good.
Yeah.
They go in his favourites and lose by 19 points. I can't give it to an Argentine, no matter how well Sebastian Salvat played, no matter how much I like him. Now, I was thinking of giving it to Savai, the second row, who scores the try of death. I was thinking about giving it to him until we did this podcast, at which point we've talked about Superboot so much and we've hyped so much on him, I don't feel I can give it to anyone else.
Yeah, I get that.
But I do want to talk about Taya Savai a bit.
Okay.
Because he unfortunately died in 2015 and quite a lot of this Fiji team are no longer with us, unfortunately.
Right.
But I want to read, there was one of his former teammates who didn't play in this game, Mose Targa, who was... played with him for Fiji, played with him before that, and was kind of a lifelong best friend. They knew each other as children.
Oh, wow.
Fiji together, and knew each other right until they died.
Oh, wow.
And I read this really lovely tribute to him from the Fiji Sun, from when he died just before the World Cup.
Go on.
He said, Savai was a giant with a gentle heart. To be honest, I have not heard him swear in all my time with him. And they'd known each other for 40 years. That speaks volumes about him. He was silent, but works very hard at whatever he does. A team player, always putting the team first in everything he does. He always gave 100% in the games he played. He was an international player and played for Queensland, Waikato, as well as Fiji, Ndrongo, Suva and Nadi. Again, it speaks to volumes how he could adapt to any environment he was thrown into and keep the number 4 jersey. It always speaks volumes about this giant.
Oh, that's lovely. That's a really nice tribute.
He then goes on to talk about when he coached some kids in Fiji. He coached like minis rugby.
Right.
And all the kids in the village used to look at his ears and say, look at his ears, gosh, what big ears he had. And he always thought it was very funny whenever the kids would make fun of his ears.
Absolutely. I mean, he was a massive lad. He had a massive everything. He was a giant.
Yeah. So he was a very good person, player, friend and brother. I'll miss him now, but I know we will meet up sometime in the future.
Oh.
My thoughts with his family, and may the good Lord continue to bless them.
Oh, that's lovely. That's really nice.
Such a lovely thing. He was clearly, and the president of the Fijian Rugby Union went on to say, it's not a sad day, only for his friends and family and for all the Fijian Rugby Union, but all the rugby lovers in Fiji. I used to meet him once in a while around town, and the towering giant would never pass before saying, Bula, Mr. Terry Kirkham. He was so humble and down to earth and such a wonderful person to know. And I just, reading that made me, I was already considering this man of the match when I went to look him up.
Yeah.
And it's hard to read that and not want to award
him for it. Of course. Yeah. I think that's an entirely justified sentiment.
Yes. But I thought he was fantastic. He popped up all over the place.
Yeah.
Kind of worked similar to the Japan players we talked about. As a kind of link player.
Yeah, yeah.
He threw one really good pass over the top to Tavula at one point as well.
Yes.
But yeah, it's between him and Superboot. But I think, having reflected on it, I've got, it's bloody Superboot, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've got to go for bloody Superboot.
Yeah, what a guy. Runner up for Savai. That's
talk about Savai.
Yes. So Dick of the Day.
Dick of the Day. Right, okay. So I think there's plenty of contenders coming up. One has to be Hugo Porter for what we're going to call now the Michael Leiner effect.
Yes.
Of being an all-time great who then shits the bed when we finally watch
him
play.
Yeah, yeah. Naituku, the prop for kicking that ball out and claiming it was for half-time. Yeah.
And I want to mention Paulo Wainalu, right? Who you may not recognise, was the replacement scrum half.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who comes on when Tabatu Zula. Tabatu Zula as well, at one point, does a cross-field chip.
Yes. Which I thought was terrific. Like a kick pass.
Yeah, little kick pass. Loved it. But Wainalu, right, the replacement scrum half, who I was going to say is on the bench, but he was not on the bench, right? You may have noticed that the starting nine goes off, and about 3 minutes later, there's an applause as the replacement scrum half comes on. Fiji play like 3 or 4 plays, like the ball goes out of play quite a few times before they can bring the replacement scrum half on.
Why?
Because he was sat in the stands in a suit, and he had to run down to the touchline and get changed.
That's phenomenal. That is Dick of the Day worthy.
Yep.
That's remarkable. So
he wasn't warmed up. He had to run down, change into his kit, and then run onto the pitch. And it took him about 4 minutes between the scrum
going
off, which Fiji had to play with 14, because they hadn't got a scrum off warmed up and on the touchline.
That's incredible. What an era of rugby this was. This is the World Cup. It's incredible. Oh, man. That's phenomenal. So he started his World Cup in a suit.
Yep. And then he ends up playing most of the game.
That's incredible. That's incredible. You cannot script this. So, is he Dick of the Day, or are we giving Dick of the Day to the same person?
Well, Dick... No, he's not Dick of the Day.
Okay.
Because Dick of the Day has to go to Juan Lanza.
Yes. And he's getting 2 votes, and we know this. We unspokenly knew this. We've not discussed this previously.
Nope.
But this is exceptional.
So, not only does he, with the line at his mercy when he could score after Cuesta Silva does some really good work to put him in.
Yeah.
He drops the ball under no pressure when he should score.
Yeah.
Right? Not only that.
He also falls over on that last overlap.
He falls over on an overlap as well. Twice, he catches the ball and runs backwards.
Yes.
Right? One of them is he just runs backwards and you think, what are you doing, mate? But the first one is particularly extraordinary.
So he gets the ball on a counter-attack and he has open field in front of him. He then slips over and you think, it happens, sometimes you lose your footing, sure.
Sure, Anthony Watson's been there.
Exactly. He gets up and he's got a couple of opposition players in front of him and he thinks, okay, I've got to get round these.
He doesn't. He has one player in front of
him. Yes, he has one player in front of him. You're absolutely right to point this out. It's a very important detail. And he thinks, okay, I've got to get round him. And sometimes it happens, sometimes it's even the right call to run backwards for 5 metres so you can lose your man, then accelerate forwards instead. He tries that.
Whilst running sideways.
Yes.
You know.
He tries that. And he just keeps going. And he keeps on going.
So the Fijian 10 keeps tracking with him.
Yeah.
And he retreats pretty much from about the 10-metre line.
Yeah.
To his own inside his own 22. Yes.
He retreats all the way back inside his own 22. And then kicks the ball directly into touch. Like, he doesn't make any yardage from the kick. So he ends up about 20 metres further back from where he caught the ball, and that's being generous, without having made contact with anybody.
He just, out of sheer fear of a man roughly his size, surrenders 20-odd metres and the ball.
Yes. So this is difficult to put into words. So chances are I will have already put this on Twitter by the time this podcast goes out. But, yeah, it's remarkable.
Because it is just extraordinary play. It's just extremely bad rugby.
Yeah.
It's the one thing you're coached as a kid never to do.
Yeah.
You know, take contact if needs be. Don't run 30 metres backwards and kick the ball out.
He was definitely afraid of contact, wasn't he? Hence the chip and chase and all the rest of it, dropping the ball. Yeah, I don't think he took contact once in the whole game, actually, come to think of it, or made a tackle.
Probably not.
So, yeah, it's baffling, isn't it? But yeah.
Yeah, he then obviously goes on to do it again, run backwards later on in the game.
Yeah, like he hasn't learned.
And you're just thinking, mate, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why has no one bollocked you for this?
Yeah.
Hugo Porter screams at referees all the time. He was like the proto Dan Bigger.
Sure.
Why isn't he bollocking his teammate for running 20 metres backwards and booting the ball out 2 metres in front of him?
100%. Yeah, it's very funny. It's one of the best pieces of shit play in this World Cup so far.
Commentator pisses himself.
Yes, he does.
That's one of the funniest things I've ever seen on a rugby pitch.
Yeah, no, it's very good. It's very good. I'd say it's one of the best pieces of shit play in this whole World Cup, and that's saying a lot from what we've had so far. So, yeah, that's good. So that's us, isn't it?
Yeah, that's us. That's us. That brings us to an end. Now, it's interesting, because this obviously is the first game Argentina and Fiji both play in the Rugby World Cup ever.
Yeah.
Right? Those are two teams that go on to haunt two Tier 1 nations in World Cups.
Oh, no.
Right? Argentina, of course, go on to haunt Ireland.
Yeah.
Fiji, of course, go on to haunt Wales. And wouldn't you know it, the next game we'll be covering, the next game played in the 1987 Rugby World Cup, was between Wales and Ireland, the two arch nemesises of these two countries.
Oh, boy.
So they play each other in a big clash. And you may notice those who are also playing each other in the opening round for the 2022 Six Nations, which has fallen just too perfectly. So, we should all being well be joined by a guest in order to cover that. The week before, possibly even the day before, those two play each other once again.
Potentially returning guest.
Yeah. 30-odd years on in the 2022 Six Nations.
Yeah.
So, please join us next week for Ireland against Wales from 1987.
Yes. I'll see you then. And while we're still here, I just want to dispute that Lee Mears does not sell crisps. He does.
Lee Mears loves crisps more than anything,
and he sells them.
The only thing he loves almost as much is the 11 p's he gets for selling them.
Yes. Goodbye.
See ya. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.